This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Thursday, August 22nd, 2013. I'm Caleb Brown. Making fishing sustainable in open waters poses a real challenge for fishermen. But there's evidence that the solution is a clearer delineation of property rights. Jonathan Adler is co-author of the SSRM paper, Learning How to Fish, Catch, Shares, and the Future of Fishery Conservation. We spoke earlier this month.
Well, the problem with Atlantic cod, like a lot of fisheries, is that they're overfished. And in the United States, in many cases, federal management of fisheries has been tantamount to no meaningful management, or at least no effective management. And more broadly, fisheries are really the best example we have of the tragedy of the commons. And traditional regulatory strategies have been shown to not be very effective at overcoming the tragedy of the commons, and rarely prevent overfishing, and where they do control fishing tend to produce other consequences, which can be bad for the fisheries as well as bad for those who participate in them.
Okay. What have been these traditional attempts to limit?
So traditionally what's been done in various regulatory strategies has been to impose limits on the type of gear that can be used, type of boats that can be used. These are essentially rules that are trying to mandate inefficiency in catching fish by making it harder to catch fish. Some fisheries have adopted catch limits for the fishery as a whole, so that when the entire fishery reaches that limit, it shuts down. And the incentive this creates for those who participate in the fishery is to catch as much as they can as quickly as possible, what analysts tend to call a race to fish. And it results in a lot of not only inefficient but very destructive fishing behavior, a lot of risky fishing behavior. It's resulted in fishing being far more dangerous than it needs to be. It results in less concern for the consequences of the fishing techniques that are used, so greater impacts on marine biology, greater impacts on non-target species, and we've had fisheries that where the entire annual catch is caught in just a few days, and that's no way to run a fishery. I would also point out for those who like eating seafood, it's not a good way to get a quality catch either. You can't ensure a fresh fish supply year round if you're catching all of the fish in 2 or 3 days.
And it lowers the prices, right?
And that has effects not only in terms of the quality of the product the consumer gets, but it also has an effect on the prices that the fishermen can get. And so it's really all the way around, it is a bad way to manage a fishery. It's not sound economically. It's not sound environmentally.
And so even if there were some sort of built-in system, I think you point out in your recent paper, a system in which fishermen were cutting back in order to rebuild stocks, there's not clearly that would even work out for them either.
Well, right. It's if there's no way to control who can participate in the fishery, there's no incentive for any individual fisherman to catch less, because what he doesn't catch, somebody else will catch. The other problem is that, and in some prior work I wrote about this, and even in an article in Regulation several years ago, that if the fishermen get together and try to cooperatively agree to alter their practices so as to eliminate the race to fish, to perhaps allocate portions of the catch among themselves, they have to worry about antitrust prosecution, because this is a casebook example or a textbook example of a horizontal agreement to restrain trade. What conservationists want would be an agreement to catch less or to catch more slowly, but that's precisely what antitrust law disallows. So we have the situation where the regulations don't make sense economically or environmentally, and other laws make it very difficult for the resource users themselves to privately create arrangements that could solve the problem.
So the lex mercatoria system that they might otherwise establish, that is among themselves, mm-hmm. and with some rigid penalties for violators, it ceases to be possible.
Right. And there in the 1950s in particular, there were examples of fisheries where the participants bonded together and created mechanisms to prevent new folks from coming in, and did so to reduce the level of catch. Now, in the 1950s, they were more focused on the quality and the value of the catch. We're not quite as aware of the environmental consequences of overfishing as we are today. But we know those sorts of arrangements would have been beneficial ecologically had they been allowed.
So what is the solution here?
Well, the solution that economists have been arguing for since the 1950s is something that is these days most people call catch shares, sometimes called individual transferable quotas or individual fishing quotas. But the idea is to establish property rights in the catch. And so what's been done in a handful of U.S. fisheries and has been done in several other countries is to allocate to participants in the fishery a percentage of the annual catch. And that is theirs. And in the best of these programs, those shares are transferable. And they carry on from year to year. And what this does first and foremost is it eliminates the race to catch. It lets a participant in the fishery know that they can fish in a more responsible, safer, more efficient manner. And they're not losing out because they weren't the first person to bring the fish in the boat. It also gives them security in the health of the fishery and an interest in the health of the fishery. And what a lot of recent empirical research has shown is that this last part, the fact that it gives them an interest in the health of the fishery, is really the key variable in improving fishery management because it means that if there is a lower catch this year for ecological reasons and that this increases the sustainability of the fishery, that is going to be reflected in the value of the catch share, and that participants in the fishery now have incentive to be more conservative, more conservation-oriented in the way they interact with regulators and the way they interact with limits on the overall catch. And in some cases, not in the United States, but in New Zealand, for example, it's actually resulted in the fishery participants essentially taking over the catch limit setting process themselves. And there's evidence that they, in fact, are actually more conservation-oriented than the regulators because it's really in their economic interest. If they catch too much this year, that affects the value of their shares in future years. The other effects of these reforms are also to just, from an economic standpoint, to increase the efficiency of the fishery. It creates the ability for more efficient fishers to purchase share from those who are less efficient. And so that means, from an economic standpoint, we can get the same fishery catch with less economic effort. But that's something that we've recognized for a long time would be the consequence of these sorts of reforms. What's really emerged in the last, say, 5 or 6 years in the empirical literature is the environmental benefits. There have now been quite a few studies and literature reviews showing that you reduce the level of bycatch. So you reduce the amount that boats are catching fish other than the ones they're trying to catch, greater ability to use less environmentally harmful fishing practices, greater monitoring of catch levels. So a greater incentive by participants in the fishery to make sure that people aren't cheating, as well as dramatic improvements in safety. Those are the sorts of results from the sort of reform that there had been a lot of debate about whether or not we would see these environmental benefits. But at this point, the empirical literature is showing quite strongly that we do get these positive benefits and that it's not just about economic efficiency. It's really about a better environmental management as well.
Are regulators moving in that direction?
Regulators have tried to move in that direction. There has been some resistance from some incumbent participants in fisheries are just nervous about change, and certainly some fishery participants that think they do well under the current system. Now, again, there have been empirical studies showing that many fishery participants who resist this change actually end up liking it after it's been implemented. But you do have some entrenched interests. There are also concerns about the effect that this could have on the makeup of a fleet. Does it result in fewer smaller fishing operations and more larger fishing operations? Does this affect, for example, small fishing communities and the like? And certainly those sorts of consequences, you can see consequences that some groups might not like. But what we found is that the gains are sizable enough that you can compensate those groups if you want. And we've also found that a lot of the socioeconomic impacts are actually, again, more positive than some of the naysayers would have predicted. So you don't have folks that are making months' worth of income in a few days. You actually see more stable employment in the industry and the like. So it's really a handful of interests that have lobbied against this. Also, some recreational fishing groups have opposed these sorts of reforms because they're worried about how recreational fishing will be balanced against commercial fishing. And unfortunately, politically, they've been fairly effective. So while both the Bush and the Obama administrations both supported management reforms moving in this direction, Congress has been less supportive, and we've seen some odd alliances of some very liberal New England members of Congress joining with some very conservative members of Congress to try and restrict the adoption of these sorts of reforms. And it's really a shame because this is an area where we know how moving in a property rights direction produces both economic and environmental benefits, and also ultimately creates more security for the folks who rely upon fishing for their livelihoods. And it's a shame to see, you know, special interest groups get in the way of that.
Jonathan Adler is with Case Western Reserve University School of Law and the Property and Environment Research Center. You can learn more about managing common pool resources at our website, cato.org.